Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Welcome to an hour of mind power. We've got a guest today that I think has such a significant background when it comes to understanding how we act, how we present ourselves really makes a difference. She's put together a book called Creating Personal Presence, Look, Talk, Think, and Act Like a Leader. Now, Deanna Booher is my guest today. She has had a previous bestseller of Communicate with Confidence. Deanna, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Now, you have a consultant firm, and you deal a great deal with Fortune 500 companies such as PepsiCo, USAA, JP Morgan. You have been featured as one of the top speakers for the 21st century. In fact, you're in the top 21. This is something you have a very strong awareness of. How is it that you as an individual evolved into this? There's a lot of people in life that wouldn't give a hoot one way or the other. Why was this important to you?
Well, I think it's important if you're going to present yourself, whether you are an business owner, an entrepreneur, you're selling your consulting business, you want to move up. And particularly myself, as I was getting started, I didn't want to make cold calls. You know, if you're on the phone, you're trying to sell yourself, you have to earn credibility. And the first thing people observe about you is your personal presence. Do you answer questions well? Do you meet people well? Are you outgoing? Can you engage them? Do you show concern? All of those things matter a great deal just to get in the door.
In today's world, there has been a concern on the part of many people that are in business that the younger generation isn't aware of how to present themselves. There is a woman I know in Boston who teaches, as you do, executives on how to sit at a table and eat. Now, these are things that many of us in our own homes, our parents taught us that, or we were in an environment in school that said these are the social protocols. Why do you think we have fallen so far away from that? And how do you think we can make a difference, and what can we do to improve it? Because a lot of people are not getting jobs because of not understanding how to present themselves.
Well, you lose any skill that you don't practice. And we have been sitting behind a computer for two decades now, and rather than interacting face-to-face or on the phone. I had someone tell me just a couple years ago, they said, make a phone call to that person? That's intrusive. I wouldn't think of calling them. And basically, we have a whole generation of people who feel uncomfortable speaking live. They've just been interacting by email, by texting. And so anything you don't practice, I don't care if you're talking about riding a bicycle. You know, you learned to ride it when you were five, and if you hadn't been on it again till you're 35, you forget. It's just you have to reacquaint yourself with that skill. And so I think that's what's happened. If people haven't hosted parties, they haven't gone out, they haven't networked a lot in that arena. I mean, they're networking, but they're doing it by social media. And those skills are important, and you do them, but they're just different protocols. And what you don't practice, you lose that sensitivity to what people expect. The criteria are different. And you just have to be reminded of what they are and what the rules are and how people judge you. And they may be valid or invalid for certain things, but you make those assessments, and you just have to get used to them. I mean, you can say something doesn't matter, but just because you say it doesn't matter, that doesn't make it so.
True. Now, something that has been mentioned to me more than once, and if I take the time to really observe, I find that the people are not wrong in their own personal observations, and that is the standard of expectation, both for adults as well as younger generations. And one of the comments I made to someone was, you better talk to the older generation because they are the ones that have perpetuated certain behaviors and patterns that the younger people have picked up on. Every generation will copy what's in front of them until they decide they want to do something on their own. And a lot of protocols, a lot of courtesies, a lot of statements about dress, sometimes you wonder if the designers have had major PMS attacks and they've never stopped. Because you just go, what do you do? How do you get this point across? And that's why people like yourself are often hired by major corporations to teach companies, the people within the company, that's all a company is people,
right,
about these protocols. But if the executives don't know them, do you think that the people that work for them are going to give a hoot?
Right. You know, and it's really not a generational thing or an age thing. I think it's an awareness thing. You have people who have grown up in a certain area of expertise that are just uninformed. For example, I work with engineers who frequently they perpetuate the myth about communication. They'll say things like, oh, I'm an engineer, I can't communicate. Everybody knows engineers can't communicate. And so as they move up in the organization, it's like, why should I worry about how I speak? How should I worry about how I respond? Why should I worry about how I deal with people? So you have that same kind of thinking, whether it's dress, whether it's how I interact or network, or what the expectations are for responding on an invitation to go to a party. They just have a mindset of what's outside of my area of expertise. It doesn't really matter because I'm not expected to know that. So if you have that kind of thinking, it doesn't matter if you're 65 or 16, you don't reach out and try to learn or expand your horizons. And somebody who's well-rounded, they understand the importance of presence and the fact that you need to be polished and a well-rounded person in general, because that opens doors for you in a lot of areas. I don't care how technically competent you are, you have to be able to communicate about that and present yourself in a different light and communicate about your technical competence, so you're not going to get very far.
Well, I think that's very important. You use a word that I don't hear many people appreciating, and that is the word presence. I think just about any of us have come in contact with someone at some time that when we were around them, they affected us so intently because of their presence. How would you describe presence? Sometimes it's been described as star quality, but what is it?
Well, basically, it's difficult to define, but most of us know it when we see it, or don't see it in many
mm-hmm.
occasions. But
mm-hmm.
when someone walks into a room, it's like conversation opens up to include them. When they speak, people respond. When they ask a question, people answer. When they stand up to lead a meeting, people give them the floor. When they walk out of a group or meeting, things just kind of fall apart. When they lead a project or whatever, people follow. They command attention. Those are the kinds of things that constitute somebody's presence. And when I do keynotes, a lot of times I will ask a group, and I'll throw that out, what constitutes someone's presence? And I have people call out things. And sometimes they'll name up to 30, 35 characteristics, and they will fall into basically four buckets, whether they're calling out habits or traits or skills. And I made those actually the subtitle of that book, Creating Personal Presence. It's how somebody looks, talks, thinks, or acts. And you can put, I don't care if they call out 30, 40 different skills, traits, or habits, they fall into those areas. And when I'm talking about looks, they might mention their facial expression, their posture, how they move. They'll say things like confidence. And you can see confidence. You can see it in how somebody moves, how they walk. But you can also hear it, and that moves into the talk area, their word choice, whether their language is tentative or it's firm. They sound shy or bold when they speak, and the intensity of their voice. And then that third part, how they think. You know, when they can't prepare for a question, for an example, an employee speaks up and says, "Well, tell me, John, what do you think we should do about this issue?" And in a meeting, and you just have to respond immediately, can't prepare, how they think on their feet. And then the last part, act, you know, their character and moral issues and just how they are personally. Those are the areas that constitute somebody's presence, and how you divvy that up,
mm-hmm.
it makes a great deal of difference. But you can't really constitute, you can't really, I guess, mark it out in percentages, you know, it's 25% this and 25% that, because people place different values on those things. And what's most observable, the look part, is not the most important. And what's harder to observe, somebody's character, how they act, is the most important part. But mm-hmm. the look part is what gets you in the door, so to speak. You know, if you're a job applicant, that's the door opener. That you look like you have presence, and then the longer you're around, people begin to see how you act. They see your character and your personality and your competence. That's what keeps you there. But you've really got to have all four to really be that well-rounded person with presence.
You had one quote in here that I got a kick out of. It was by Bo Brummel, and he was around in the 1700s, 1800s?
I don't really know the date on that.
Okay, but his quote was, if people turn to look at you on the street, you are not well-dressed. And I thought, no, that's not in today's world. When you really look sharp, they stop and they look at you like, wow, what's happened with you? It's really fun. Of course, if you're in New York City, nobody cares. I mean, you could be dressed like Bugs Bunny. They don't notice a thing.
Everybody looks strange, huh? If you...
But seriously, how we dress makes a difference. And I can remember when I was a young woman, that is the reason I was hired for a job. I didn't have any experience. And one of the things that happened, this company was looking for an executive secretary. And I have to tell you, I was the poorest excuse for an executive secretary you could ever imagine. But jobs weren't available, so I applied for it. And they said I was the only person that they had interviewed that they could even consider. And it was because of the way I dressed, the way I presented myself, and it was learn as you go in the job positioning. Now, for those of you listening, you may say, oh, Donna, you got lucky. Well, yes and no, because they were looking for someone that could be in front of people and someone that could communicate with people, and someone that liked people. And believe it or not, they were having a hard time finding it.
It's extremely hard. It's extremely hard to find that person. We look for those kind of people all the time because they have to interact. As a communication training firm, we want somebody who can communicate both in writing and on the phone, because they're always looking at us saying, well, you people should know how to do it, and the people who work for you should know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And they look for us to have employees who model the skills that we teach, and it is extremely difficult to find that kind of employee. We always think we can teach them the skills, we can teach them the software, we can teach them the hardware, we can teach them all of our courses, but what we can't teach is how you present yourself.
That's absolutely
so difficult. We don't care what kind of degrees. We like master's degrees, we like doctoral degrees, but we don't really care if they have that or not, if they're working in an administrative position. It's just the other things you can't teach. And CEOs, officers in the C-suite are commenting on that all the time. They'll say, I've got such and such who's a middle manager, they're competent, they could go to the next level if they presented themselves well. And they don't realize that that intangible thing represents things about attitude and character. For example, I heard this analogy once, and it's always stayed with me. A CEO was talking about the airplane, and he said, when a passenger gets on our airplane and they pull down the meal tray and there's a big coffee stain on the meal tray, to them, that passenger thinks, aha, they probably haven't serviced their airplane engine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it just makes an impression. And you know, I certainly have this feeling, when you check into a hotel and you see hair in the bathtub, you think, they didn't clean the bathtub, so they probably did. I don't know if they changed the sheets in the bed. And what if
right.
these glasses in here are not washed? It just gives you a bad impression of the whole hotel and how clean the food is in the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And so the same thing applies by the way you dress and you speak. If you choose the wrong word, you make grammatical errors in your writing, they think, well, I'm not sure they amortized my loan correctly if you work for a bank. Or they think, I'm not sure you charged me correctly in my credit card if you work for a credit card company. Or, you know, they're making associations. They think, well, you're not attentive to detail. You're sloppy in everything that you do if you're sloppy in the way you look. So it's just a carryover impression that you create.
You make a comment about passion in your book, and I think that that's something many people don't realize, that when they really have a passion about what they do, for example, building a violin, maybe someone is able to make this musical instrument unlike anybody else in the world, and when they start to talk about it, there's something that's magical with passion. You may never have been interested in a violin at all, and by the time you finish listening to this person's story, you're wanting to know more about the violin. Who plays it? Why is it such a beautiful instrument? Wow, this person is so passionate about what they do. I felt like the violin was a living thing. This is something that's so special, and people forget this about themselves. They forget that when they love something, when they have a passion for it, whether it's a child, a violin, a tree,
or an idea,
when they can, an idea of some kind, that is going to touch somebody somewhere. Let's talk about that for a minute, because I think so many people today have this feeling of oppression. Oh, if I just don't get a job, I'm not going to have this, I'm not going to have that. They forget about certain things. It's very, very important.
It's important when you're selling your ideas to other people. If you're in a meeting, I don't care if you're fundraising in a community, if you're going in and asking people to contribute to a cause, or if you're in a staff meeting trying to sell your boss on your budget, your interests interest other people. And I hear people in the C-suite, executive suite, they're always saying to me in coaching situations, if the person who's presenting something to me does not feel excited about something they're telling me, a project they're working on, if they're giving me an update, and they don't talk with intensity, and they're not excited about it, I'm not sure they can pull it off. I'm not sure it's going to work like they as well as they say it is. So you've got to be passionate when you say, I don't think that's going to work, John. You've got if you're against something, speak up against it. If you're for it, speak up for it. If you've got a recommendation to make, make it, and make it with intensity. I just coached. I was in Pittsburgh this was last Thursday, talking to a group of executives, 143 executives at a bank. I was the Tuesday before that in Knoxville, and talking to a chief operating officer about some people I was going to be coaching the next day, and one of them had that very comment. They said, when you're working with these two executives, make sure that they understand that they need to, if they're going to go to the next level, they need to have more intensity when they make a recommendation. They tend to, if they are opposed to something, when an idea comes up, they just say, yeah, you know, yes, I think that's going to work, or yes, I think we'll meet that quota, but they don't have intensity. That was the word they kept using. They don't have intensity when they express an idea. And if you don't, they just think of you as a yes person, a yes woman, a yes man,
mm-hmm.
or it could be a no man or no woman. But your interest other people, that's what makes them engage and think you have confidence about what you're saying. That is part of your presence, just like we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, when you mentioned that, it brings a story to mind about Walt Disney. Walt Disney went bankrupt a number of times during his career as a man that was bringing phenomenal things to the world through animation. Before he did, I think it was Snow White, if I'm correct, they were broke, basically. His brother was a financial officer, and Disney said, oh, we have to present this to the banks. We have to do this. We have to do that. We have to do the other. And his brother, who was what we would typically call the bean counter. These are how many beans we've got. We can't divvy up any beans. We don't have any beans to share with anybody. Walt said, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. So his brother knew that Walt was, when he was passionate about something, don't get in his way. So he had a bunch of people over, bankers included, to tell them about the story Snow White. There was not 1 ounce of interest in financing this project. By the time he finished with the animation that had been done, the story itself, finished it, a banker stood up and said, we'll fund you. That was it. Because they could see the vision that he had. Now, to many listening, they might say, oh, that was Walt Disney. But that happens all over the place. I think of someone that is in business doing chocolate chip cookies. How many chocolate chip cookies do we have in this planet? We've got gazillions of them. This woman managed to fix a different chocolate chip cookie, and it's awesome. And she's in business for herself. And it's marvelous. And I'm not talking about Mrs. Fields either.
You know, you mentioned something else that's inherent in that story you just tell about Walt Disney, and that is the power of telling stories and in creating personal presence. There's a whole chapter called Think Hollywood, and I talk about the techniques that you can use in addition to having passion, and that is the power of telling a story. You know, you said he told a story. What you just did, Donna, what you just did was tell us a story about Walt Disney, which made the point about being passionate. And what Walt Disney did about to get his financing was tell a story. And that is thinking like Hollywood. And I go into the power of stories. For middle management, sometimes you give numbers, you give data, because you've got to educate. If you've done the work, if you're a staff person, you've done the work, you've got to sort of educate your boss sometimes to the research you did in case they get a question. But when you're talking up the chain, you need to tell a story and make your point memorable. They won't remember the numbers, the percentage, the data. I mean, you know, we're in political season. People are throwing out numbers and all the time, and you don't remember them. But you will remember a story. That drives it home. And metaphors and analogies and slogans, that's what commercials are built on, because you can remember commercials that you heard 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or where's the beef? Or we'll leave the light on for you. Or just do it. Or, you know, all of those commercials are old that I've just been mentioning. They're old, and we remember them. Because they were significant.
You have a chapter on abandoning Chicken Little and stop sugarcoating. That I found was a very interesting title for the chapter. Why is that significant? And explain to my audience what it means.
Well, the Chicken Little fable, if you remember, is somebody who's always gloom and doom. You know, he was always going around saying, you know, sky's falling, sky's falling, sky's falling. And we have people who still do that. You know, everything that happens, they always assume it's the worst. You know, oh, poor me, poor us, poor company. We're going down the tubes. This is the worst thing that can happen. And after a while, people tune you out. You know, they don't believe you. Everything can't be the worst. And you don't want to be around those people. Now, on the other hand, the last part of that, stop sugarcoating, you do need to acknowledge when the situation is bad. there's a happy medium between the others. You know, everything can't be Pollyanna too.
Mm-hmm.
So to really build your credibility, and part of presence is to be a straight shooter, to really say it like it is, but not always gloom and doom, to acknowledge this is the situation, it's not pleasant, but here are the straight facts, this is what I know about the situation, and then focus on alternatives. How do we move forward from here? It's show concern and empathy with the situation, but then here's the action we can take. Here's what I know, here's what I don't know. I can't predict the future. Nobody can predict the future, but here's where we're going, team. Here's where we're going, company. Here's where we're going, customers. This is what we're going to try to do and how we're altering the picture. And that's what is the most comfortable and the most respected kind of position and the most respected kind of leader.
You make a statement in your book, people with presence rarely rush to judgment of people, situations, data. They make it a practice to listen first, to observe, to collect, and assess information. I want to share with you something that just happened this morning. I was sent an email by an individual regarding a particular experiment that was done by a beer company. They hired, I forget, like 143 bikers that were tattooed all over their bodies. They are the persona image of the rough and tough. All of them were wearing leather. Some of them were bare-chested, and they were in this theater that had about 200 seats. So they filled just about every seat, and they did an experiment. They actually filled, I'll stand corrected, they actually filled every seat except for two. So then they offered the invitations to young couples that there were two seats left for this particular show. And it was played up. So these young couples walk in and they see all these bikers. And they film the responses of people. They did this more than once. They did this with more than one young couple. And it was really fun to watch and see how some people immediately made a judgment because someone had a tattoo or was wearing leather that they were getting out of there. This was Trouble City. And they left. Yet there were others that said, there's only two seats left, let's do it. The heck with what they look like, let's just go in and sit down. And when they finished showing this, it was about a minute of film, about a minute and a half. All of a sudden, all of these people that came across as bikers, they were deliberately placed there, cheered them and toasted them, the young couples, with beer. And the message was, things are not always what they appear to be. Don't make a judgment. So what you said in your book just resonated with me because you have to find out the facts. And we're going to make instant assessments. It's a very human quality. What is the most significant experience you've had relative to that particular situation that really made an impression on you in your life?
Well, I think one that comes to mind is a big mistake I made in hiring. And that is, I had two candidates scheduled. My staff had looked through the candidates to be hired, the resumes, and we were down to two. And one was cold, I never met her, and the other was someone that a colleague, a very respected colleague, had referred and said, you know, this person is very well qualified and you're going to love her and she'll really do a great job. The first one that I never met came in, presented herself really well. She was dressed well, polished, all the things that we talked about with presence. And the second one I met that I was predisposed to hire because of all the good things I'd heard about her did not present herself well. She was dressed okay, but she was very tentative. She slumped in the chair. She didn't really approach me. She didn't shake hands when she came in. When I asked a question, she didn't really elaborate. It was just kind of a yes or no answer. And I hired the person who presented herself well because I'm looking for that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a big mistake. I mean, when she came, she was not there but a couple of days, and I realized it was way over her head to learn our software in the office. She did not have any inclination to be customer service focused. Grammar was way above her. She could not get out an email without a mistake in it. And after about 3 weeks, I said, this is not going to work, and I had to let her go. And I called my second choice up and offered her the job. And we gave her some coaching because we have communication consultants in and out of the office. She quickly picked up you know, this presence thing and learn to communicate well. She was able to listen on phone calls to their sales executives and picked up well how to handle and quickly how to handle the calls. And within 4 or 5 months, she was exceptional. She became phenomenal on the phone and could actually do as well as our salespeople on the phone. So that is an excellent example of me prejudging on appearance and mm-hmm. on their first initial meeting with them and who is going to do well on the job. And unfortunately, that's the problem. That's the good news and the bad news. The good news is you can get through a lot of screens by presenting yourself well. And the bad news is for business owners or managers, we make snap judgments like that all the time and, you know, assess people's competencies. And
very true.
And we hire people, we make bad hiring decisions a lot of times and then overlook people for promotions that are well-deserving and are doing a great job because they're not very proficient in their communication skills.
Diana Buher, you have a marvelous book here, Creating Personal Presence. I think it would be great for every person in high school, male and female, to get a copy of this because I think they need to know about the world that they're facing and that how they present themselves makes a difference, how they speak makes a difference, how they think makes a difference. And all of this is a learning curve. We all have to learn at some point. And I think your book goes a long way to helping someone create the presence that they would like to have. Now, what's your website that people can go to?
Just like my last name, Buher, I hope they don't boo her, but it's B-O-O-H-E-R, Buher.com.
Buher.com. Yes. If this is something that you are interested in, you've heard Diana, I think you will find it that it's going to be a wonderful tool to utilize. Improving the self is an ongoing job. You never get there 100%. And you should have a lot of fun in being able to learn how to do for yourself in a more effective way. That magic that's within you, bringing it out so that it represents you with that level of quality and essence that really comes from the inside. Diane Buher, thank you very much. It's been a delight having you as a guest. I wish you continued success, and thank you for being on the show.
Sure. Thank you, Donna.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. More good things to share. Don't go away.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprisin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprisin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprisin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number to call into if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008.
800-800-8. Well, if you're like me, you're out there getting ready for the holidays, you're baking this whenever you have an hour or two of time, and you're fitting it in between different things, you've got people calling you for parties, you've got appointments to keep, you've got trying to make sure you've got all your gift buying taken care of. It's really quite a deal, isn't it? Well, I'll tell you, I decided I was going to really bite the cookie bullet, you might say, and I've been whipping up some different recipes, and it's really been wonderful, and I'll perhaps share a couple of them with you tomorrow when I'm in Portland, which, by the way, I am going to be appearing in Portland on Saturday. I am going to be heading on down to Oregon tomorrow, and I'll be doing the show from Portland, Oregon tomorrow, and so if you want to find out about the event, please go to my website, DelphiInternational.com, and you'll be able to see all the information printed out with the address of the events happening and everything that's going on there. So if you want to check that out, feel free to do so. But anyway, I just know that everybody is, you're just going a mile a minute. I know what it is like for me, so I'm sure that you might even be 10 times busier. So just take a break every once in a while. And if you've been doing a lot of baking, you've been really involved with taking care of the laundry or doing whatever has to be done, and you're busy working and all that other stuff, take some time out for yourself. If nothing else, go out just for a walk and check out your neighborhood. Look at all the beautiful decorations, Christmas lights, the Christmas festivities that go on, that people put on. It's just so much fun. We need to remember that it's time to have fun. And one of the things that I really enjoy doing is walking around and seeing what my neighbors have put up and put out. I mean, we have some neighbors, they come up with new things every year, and I just go, wow, and it's so cool. I'm glad they're doing it because I don't have time to do it, but I have the time maybe to enjoy it. So Victor and I and sometimes the neighbor will just put on our warm clothes and go out and find out what's happening. And every day it seems like somebody has something new up, and it's so colorful and just it's just wonderful. That's what I think makes the holiday season so magical, because it doesn't happen any other time of the year. And speaking of going out and walking, I came across this poem entitled Encircled. It said, whenever you meet a stranger in winter, whether you're shuffling through slush or slouched in a plastic seat on the bus, lift up your gaze from below your cap to look in his eyes for the tiny candle that you've heard poets speak of, some glimmer of humor or honeyed delight that reignites when we greet each other, spreading its light in concentric circles, ever widening. Imagine a rush hour bus, a glow inside from the tiny candles in all of us, each one relit by someone who dared to look up and smile at another instead of just looking away. Seeing at last, not another brown coat in a seat, but a human, illuminated, a sliver of divinity. Isn't that lovely? I think that is a wonderful thing just to tuck away in your mind. Every one of us, like a light, like a candle. And every one of us have that flame inside of ourselves. That's what makes this life so special, because each and every one of us are unique, and that's special. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-627-6008. Well, tomorrow, we're going to be talking about petscaping, and we're also going to have a second guest. We're going to be talking with the author of Mary's Son. And it's a wonderful Christmas story about a couple of young people from different sides of the social status, the social order, you might say. So we've got a wonderful show set up for tomorrow, and I hope you'll tell your friends about it and that you'll listen in, because I think it's going to be a lot of fun. If you want to check out the future guests that are coming up, go into BBS, check out show information, and you'll find a listing of the people that are going to be coming up. Now, I wanted to bring something up. I've been hearing here in the Seattle area, which is where I am in the Pacific Northwest, there's been a lot of commentary about scams, not just through email, but through phone calls. So I thought I would share something for those of you that maybe you've been getting some of these items, maybe you're getting stuff in the mail. They come in all forms, costumes, colors, it just is there. And we have to pay attention. The saying, if it seems too good to be true,
you're probably right. It is too good to be true. It more than likely has something behind it. But there's a lot of people that are really skilled at being able to convey a fact that, gee whiz, this is something you can do. And sometimes friends can be talked into doing certain things, and we trust our friends, and so maybe we don't think things through as clearly as we should. There is an advanced fee fraud. Advanced fee fraud. Now, this is what happens with someone that works with an investor that will say, gee whiz, we found a mistake involving a purchase of a low-priced stock. We can correct this for you. And it usually begins with an offer to pay you a seemingly high price for the worthless stock that you're holding in your portfolio. Of course, to take the deal, you've got to send a fee in advance to pay for the service. But if you do so, you're never going to see the money again, and you never know what country it's going to. It may not be Nigeria like it was for so many years. Also, there are affinity frauds where they will use a person's religious or ethnic identity to gain trust and then steal their life savings. Now, this happens frequently with older people, but the reality is it is with people of all ages, and it's getting to your emotional self. And one of the things that I think most of us need to learn is how to use the word no, thank you. No, N-O. Those two letters are pretty potent, pretty powerful, because this goes on at churches. It goes on with foreign situations, exchange. Internet fraud is another one. I mentioned it, identity theft to a letter from Nigeria informing you of unclaimed funds. I've been getting stuff in my email box. I don't know about you, but I have, just in this past week, I have $1,500 to put into your account. Yeah, right, sure. You're just going to give me $1,500. I don't think so. So they just go into the delete section. But the reality is that even if you put them on your junk mail, they come in from so many other sources, they're going to continue to ply you with enticements and hoping that just by sheer repetition, maybe you're going to say yes. Also, prime bank schemes. There are all kinds of people that like to promise you triple-digit returns through investment portfolios of some of the top banks in the world. The Federal Reserve has even spoken out saying these things don't exist. So don't even get into that. Promissory notes, senior investment frauds. I mean, we have had cases here in the Seattle area where people trusted someone and said, okay, this is what I'll pay you, and they ended up losing everything, and they still have yet to catch the thieves. One of the biggest components is we need to remember not to be driven by emotion. One of the biggest things con artists do, they want to know if you're needy or if you're greedy. Those two things, needy and greedy, they want to ply their wares. It's something the advertising market has been aware of forever, and this is a reality of life. If you have a need, if they can figure out a way to entice you through that need, like a lot of mortgage fraud is done in this way, well, what we can do for you, and then all of a sudden you find that you've lost your home. So there's just so much that goes on out there. If you really have a concern, ask questions. Don't hand anybody a check. Check things out. And if you have any older individuals in your home or in your family that you know might be vulnerable to this, try to make them aware. And sometimes it's tough. Sometimes it's really tough. I've known of many people that have had older members of their family that trusted someone, and without their family knowing about it, they ended up putting their money out to this individual, and the individual disappeared into the ether. So you have these things that occur. So you always, always should get a second opinion. And that's not easy to do. But if you've been burned a couple of times, you know to do it. Hopefully you survived it well. But just be wise. Be wise. Get a second person's opinion. Remember, it's your money. You've earned it. Take care of it. You don't need to go in for the scams. And I'll tell you what, I've yet to find anybody that's going to be giving you
$1 million. Maybe you get lucky and you win a lottery. Congratulations. But I'll tell you what, most of us just have to work, plan, and save, and be attentive to how we use our money so that it can compound in the way that we want. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. When we come back, I'll have a story for you. Also, I'll be giving you information on the 2012 winter horoscope for Virgo and Capricorn when we come back, so don't go away.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Okay, for you Virgos and you Capricorns out there, here's what we've got in the way of a forecast for 2012. This is so much fun. I think horoscopes are absolutely fascinating. Now, I'll tell you something. It was years ago that I met my mentor who introduced me into the self-discovery and self-development of psychic abilities. She was a psychic herself, but she also was a professional astrologer. I am not an astrologer. It's never been something that I've been that interested in. However, she really was able to figure me out in a very short period of time, and I think it's a wonderful tool when people are able to develop it. But these are just lighthearted things. Anyway, Virgo, for those of you under the sign of Virgo, by golly, you know what? You're just going to have a good time. I think this winter is going to find you feeling a little bit lighter in spirit than you have in a long while, because you Virgos have a tendency to be sort of, well, what do I want to say, rather academic, and you're very mental. You really are people that like to deal with details, and by golly, you're darn good at it. And you have a strong sense of ethics, so sometimes I think you just get so involved and so serious. Now, when it comes to dealing with money, you are very frugal if necessary. And if you have to pull in your financial bills, you do it. But by golly, you have always a plan in mind. You are a person that wants to really make sure that you keep things in balance and you don't like to be caught short. So you're going to be broadening your horizons. This is a wonderful year for you under the sign of Virgo. You're really going to be looking at what you can do for yourself, how you can broaden your horizons. And then you really want to take some time for travel, but you're going to plan it out because it looks like you are going to be doing the balancing act with the budget, and so you're going to make sure that you have everything in order, and there's going to be a lot of opportunity for you to develop some new friendships and associations, which I think is going to be a plus for you. Now, for you little goats out there, you little Capricorns, you know what? You have got the stamina of, what do I want to say, mountains. Well, you're a little goat, right? Capricorns are those little critters that can climb up situations and go and weather through storms, and they're like little mountain goats. So what you've got here is tremendous endurance, a lot of stamina, and you can often handle real tough situations and figure out how you're going to do the balancing act and survive it all when other people might be gasping, wondering if it's even possible. Well, you're going to find that relationships for you in 2012 are going to be everything. And a lot of relationships from past years are going to be starting to resurface, and you're going to find that you've got a bond that you have developed through proper and good communication through the years. And it's going to serve you well. And if you need help, you're going to find that you've got it. When it comes to money and career, by golly, you're going to get recognition. There are people that are going to say, you have proven yourself. You are able to perform. We believe in you. We know you're dependable, and this is your year. So when it comes to traveling, well, you're really going to want to save as much money as possible, because when you travel, you want to go in style, and you want to be comfortable. You want to go to Venice, if you want to go to Africa, wherever it is you might want to be, or travel the United States. However you do it, you want to make sure that you're going to be comfortable. You don't want to in any way not have the means to do what you want to do with a touch of style. So that's the two signs. We have two signs left, Aquarius and Pisces, and we will be covering that tomorrow. That's right, and I'll be doing my broadcast from Portland, Oregon. And I wanted to share a few stats with you today. Do you feel stressful during the holidays, or do you have a good time with them? Well, in my personal opinion, I think a lot of it has to do with how much we put on ourselves. And I know I am terrible about that. Sometimes I do too much, and other times I'll just sit down and I'll just look at what I've done and go, wow, that really turned out pretty nice. Yep, I think those cookies will make it. They'll taste pretty good. You need to be able to take time to enjoy yourself. Well, there was a poll that was done, and roughly 90% of people from 16 different countries report that they absolutely love the holiday season. And they don't care whether it's the formal Christmas structure or it's some other holiday that they're celebrating. They just love the feel of it. They don't have a problem at shifting their attitudes and their feelings into what you'd consider that feel good that comes with all of the magic of the holidays. And I do feel its magic in many ways. And the magic comes from that openness and receptivity to listening to beautiful music, stories, looking at all the things that are going on, talking with people. It's just, I don't know, there's just this wonderful feel. That's my perception. And there are some people that, well, they get a little bit overwhelmed. They don't like being in the stores and the lines, and they go, just it's just too much pressure. Well, let me give you a rundown on various countries and how they feel about the joyous attitude. Now, remember, 90% of people in these 16 countries, the Philippines, 97% joy, Russia, 96, Germany, 95, China, 94, Mexico, 94, Spain, 93, United Kingdom, 91, Australia, 89, Malaysia, 89, Brazil, 88, South Africa, 87, France, 85, Canada, 83, Netherlands, 83, United States, 82, and India, 79%. Hey, it's an individual thing. And you know what's wonderful about the holidays? You don't have to have a whole bunch of money to have a good time. You really don't. Some of the most wonderful memories that my husband and I have are going into Seattle when we didn't have very much money in our pockets. We had money for gas,
But we would go in, we were all bundled up. We'd have enough cash where if we wanted to get some hot cocoa at Nordstrom's in their outside place where, you know, if it were snowing, great. If it was bitter cold, which it always is this time of the year in downtown Seattle. But we just had a wonderful time. Everything was so colorful, so beautiful. We'd walk in and out of stores, and we just had a fun time. We didn't spend a penny. And then we went to one of the fanciest restaurants, and it was so cold outside. We go into this beautiful, beautiful lounge area that was open during the day, and we sat there and we just had some wonderful conversation, cup of hot tea, got warmed up, and went out and did some more. So I know we're at the end of the show. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, remember the holiday season is about love. It is about joy. It is about this wonderful experience called life. And I want you to feel it in your very, very bones, all the way to, well, whatever level you want it to go. But remember, it's up to you to feel it. Nobody can feel it for you. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna. We'll be back with you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on VBS Radio. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.